Here is the week in Congressman John Faso news. Votes he took, positions he espoused, and protest rallies and town halls that he attended or not.
According to the website 538.com, Representative Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 90% of the time, up from 89.7% of the time last week. Congress did not do much this week that wasn't more symbolic than real. Representative John Faso voted with a Republican majority July 19th, 229-180, against a theoretical carbon tax. Or said another way, Faso voted to express, quote, the sense of Congress that a carbon tax would be detrimental to the United States economy, unquote. On July 18th, Faso also voted with a Republican majority on another show vote to support, quote, the officers and personnel who carry out the important mission of the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, unquote. That passed 244-35, with 133 Democrats voting present.
Richard Moody is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Elected officials from both major parties are calling President Donald Trump to end tariffs on Canadian paper commonly used in newsprint, calling the policy an attack on the newspaper industry. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer wrote in an op-ed piece July 23rd, and I quote, "Community-oriented newspapers have long been the lifeblood of small towns and cities across upstate New York. In this brutally competitive media landscape, our community papers already operate on razor-thin margins," end quote. Schumer warned that the U.S. Commerce Department's proposed permanent tariff on the specialty paper would have, and I quote, "massive negative impacts across the whole American newsprint industry and its local supply chain," end quote. U.S. Representative John Faso, Republican of Kinderhook, said, and I quote, "People across the United States depend on smaller local newspapers to know what's going on in their communities. These tariffs threaten the financial viability of smaller newspapers, which already operate on very thin margins by raising the cost of newsprint. Congress should overturn the newsprint tariff if President Trump fails to reverse course on this unreasonable action," end quote. The U.S. International Trade Commission heard testimony from various lawmakers opposed to the proposal July 17. The commission will vote on imposing permanent duties on groundwood paper August 28. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. After the July 18th New York Times editorial, and I quote, "John Faso is race baiting his opponent," end quote, the Kinderhook-based first-term Republican congressperson responded with a letter to the editor. In the July 20th response, Faso says it was unfair for the Times to write that Faso's opponent, Antonio Delgado, is, and I quote, "unfit for the office because he had a career as a rapper," end quote, because, and I quote, "I never said that. I did say that he is obligated to explain what he meant by the songs he wrote, which denigrated our nation and the free enterprise system and often glorified pornography and drug use," end quote. The Times editorial says Faso is counting on constituents in New York's 19th congressional district to be bigots because of several recent statements, not just the attacks on Delgado's over a decade old hip-hop album. Faso favors stricter standards for food stamp recipients because he said, and I quote, "virtually every drug dealer they arrest has got a food stamp card in his pocket," end quote. And he is also running advertisements promising to, and I quote, "keep MS-13 out of New York," end quote, with photos of ominous-looking tattooed Latino men. The Times editorial said, and I quote, "Faso seems to feel more comfortable exploiting painful racial divisions than talking about his votes in Congress," end quote. Faso wrote in the letter to the editor, and I quote, "Delgado also uses many phrases derogatory to women in law enforcement. One can only imagine what your editorial board would say about me had I uttered the same words as my opponent has." Richard Brodsky, a former state assembly member, said in the Albany Times Union, and I quote, "the best you can say for John is that he is becoming a fellow traveler in modern racial and cultural divisiveness," end quote.
U.S. Representative John Faso spoke by telephone from his Washington, D.C. office with constituents both Tuesday, July 24th and Wednesday, July 25th. Faso took questions submitted online or by telephone concerning a variety of topics, including status of Medicare and Medicaid, concerns over the Robert Mueller probe, tariffs and their impacts on farmers, health care, Social Security, and other issues. WGXC has recordings of the conversations with constituents online in the WGXC archives. Here is an excerpt of the July 25th conference call.
The president made a mistake in not explicitly denouncing the Russian interference in our election and not explicitly upholding the findings of not just congressional committees, bipartisan, by the way, but also our intelligence community that the Russians did attempt to influence. Now, it's important to also note in all this hyperbolic discussion about this topic, and Director Mueller, who is the special counsel, there has not yet been any evidence that the Russian that there was collusion with the Trump campaign. And secondly, let me finish on this point.
Isn't the word using hyperbolic contradicting what you're saying, though? It seems like you want it both ways.
I'm not sure
how it's hyperbolic. You're agreeing with it.
No, I'm saying that there's no evidence that they had any impact on any election, and that the amount of money that they did interfere though.
Absolutely,
they interfered. The last point that you made about the tariffs, I have publicly said that I thought that what the administration should have done is gone explicitly after the Chinese theft of intellectual property, which has damaged many of our companies, and also some of the violations of the WTO agreement, the World Trade Organization agreement that they signed in terms of the conditions that U.S. companies have to face in order to do business in China. We would have been much better focused on those things and going in against China with the Canadians and the Mexicans and also with the EU. Instead, we're having the specter of a broad trade war on all fronts. And I think, candidly, that is ill-advised. And so I have met with more than a dozen businesses in our district that use, for instance, aluminum to mold into different products that is imported from Canada. The administration used a national security justification for imposing these tariffs against Canada, and yet the Canadians are not a national security threat to the United States. So I have been quite emphatic that I think the administration is barking up the wrong tree in this approach. Clearly, we want to negotiate better agreements, but getting into a full-scale trade war has unintended collateral damage. And that collateral damage is what you're seeing yesterday when the administration said they were going to use the existing authority they have under the commodities laws to subsidize agriculture to the tune of $12 billion. I mean, I think that this is really wrongheaded in the approach they've taken. Better to have not created the trade war to begin with and not have to expend the $12 billion. And again, this is not to say that we don't have some legitimate grievances that the president has pointed out in terms of our trading relationships. But these need to be done, especially with our allies, in a negotiated way and not in a precipitous way, because this is going to inspire reciprocal actions on the part of those other nations. And we're already seeing that. And that is going to have collateral damage on businesses and jobs in our district. I've already been speaking to people that are experiencing significant increases in prices for steel and aluminum, for instance, and to farmers that are concerned about the damage to our export markets in terms of dairy and soybeans, etc. So this is an issue where I have to say I part company with the administration. I think their approach is really the wrong one, and it's not going to work, my fear. And history tells us that tariffs simply invite countermeasures by other parties. Look at Smoot-Hawley in the 1930s. The Smoot-Hawley tariffs adopted by the U.S., took a worldwide recession and turned it into a worldwide depression. And we have a booming economy right now, and I would hate to see the tariff policy undermine that strength in our economy. Star 3 to get in the queue. Who is next?
Our next caller is Polly from High Falls. Polly?
Hi, Polly. Hello.
So I am calling. First of all, I want to say that I really appreciate what you said about us all listening to our own news programs.
I'm sorry, you keep breaking.
There's a great deal in our country right now, so I was very happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, you keep breaking up, too, so hopefully...
Okay, hold on, I'm walking back. I was out feeding my birds, okay? I'm getting back towards my house where I can hear you better.
Yeah, well, as long as you don't... Go ahead, as I was going to say...
Here's my question. My question is regarding immigration policy in our country right now and how it impacts on farming. So as you know, we have an awful lot of farm workers, people who are very long-term residents of the United States, who are from Mexico originally, as an example, other parts of other places in South America.
Right.
The current administration is so aggressive towards people who are Mexican or Spanish-speaking or look like they might be, that these people are being stopped on the road when they're driving. They are being harassed. They are being deported on trivial charges. And as a result, they don't want to work. And they don't want to leave the house. They don't want to get behind the wheel of a car and drive a farm truck.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of being pulled over.
Now,
just a second, sir. Said a little bit earlier that, you know, you talked about, well, you know, people who, when they're in jail, they're separated from their children. This is true. However, many of the people who are being separated from their children are here to apply for asylum. And they should never have been arrested. They didn't commit a crime. Being in the United States because you come to the States to apply for asylum is not a crime.
That's right.
So how can you possibly justify that? And the overall attitude of the current administration, which is so blatantly racist, it's only against people who are Mexican who are here. I don't see them going into the bars in New York City and arresting all the Irish who are working in the bars who don't have their papers in order.
So let me ask you, could I ask you a question?
So it's really having an effect on the farmers.
On July 25th, FASO voted with mostly Republicans to pass the Increasing Access to Lower Premium Plans and Expanding Health Savings Accounts Act of 2018. The bill, if it passes the Senate and is signed into law by the President, would delay the Affordable Health Care Act's health insurance tax for 2 years and expand the health savings accounts. On July 24th, FASO voted with Republicans and 57 Democrats to pass the Protect Medical Innovation Act, which would repeal the medical device tax. The repeal of the 2.3% tax on some devices sold by medical manufacturers was also another repeal of part of the Affordable Care Act, and this part would not have gone into effect until 2020. But the two bills, if signed into law, would cost taxpayers $90 billion over 10 years, The Hill reports. And the legislation does not suggest how the government will cover those costs.
The Daily Freeman reports that the post office at 111 Market Street in the village of Saugerties will be named for late U.S. Representative Maurice Hinchey as President Donald Trump signed the bill into law. U.S. Senators Charles Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, both Democrats, and U.S. Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, co-sponsored the measure, with U.S. Representative Louise Slaughter, a Democrat from Western New York who died this past March, and announcing the signing July 26. Faso said, and I quote, "Naming Congressman Hinchey's hometown post office after him is an enduring recognition of his lifelong commitment to public service and the people of upstate New York. I'm glad that after months of work from New York delegation members in both chambers of Congress and both sides of the aisle that this bill has been signed into law," end quote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.